Good morning to each of you. I bring you greetings in the name of Jesus. The one we sang about, if it wasn't for his mercy, this morning as I look back in my own life, where would I be this morning? God has been very merciful to me, even though the paths I have traveled on have not been, some of them have not been wise and according to his plan. And so we're thankful for his goodness to us here today. Well, the message this morning that I have is a sermon that I've been thinking about for the last number of months, and a number of things that brought it to my mind. And as I sat down yesterday to put it together, I realized that I had too much time to think about it, because I have too much, and I don't want to keep you here past time this morning. So I don't know where we're going to cut this off at or how far we'll get. But one of the things that brought my attention to this subject, and we're going to be talking about work this morning, working with your hands. You can turn it in your Bibles to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. In verse 11, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 11, I was working at a place, we're not quite done there, Jeff and Dana Lease working in their basement, and it's a new house. They built it maybe about 8 years ago. Very nice property, and we are spending quite a bit of time in their basement doing some extensive trim and cabinetry work there. We've been there for probably 20 days working. It's very extensive. But as you walk out their back door, which I've done many, many times, there's a porch over there. There's a porch with a roof over it, and up on the beam under the roof, there's this verse. Verse 11, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. The King James says, "And that you study to be quiet and to do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you." Their version said, "Aspire to live quietly, mind your own affairs, and work with your own hands." And I thought about that just a lot. And I told Dana, I said, I like your verse out on your back porch. And she said, well, thank you. She said that verse to her and Jeff, it's important to them. She said she thinks as a culture we've lost the value of working with our hands. And it's good to work with our hands. That's not a bad thing. So that was an interesting thought. Thought about that. Some time back, Brother Gary had asked me if I could help him identify who the poor people are. How can we identify them? That was a good question. I thought about that just a lot. Who are the truly poor people? Gary also had given me this book recently, A Good Return, and I was working on this sermon, and it's a good book. It's about my size. It's not too thick, not too big. It's an easy read. Good perspective. Makes you think. It's a good book to read. I'm not quite through it yet, but almost. So that influenced my thinking some on this sermon. I was also talking to another customer. She was 96 years old. She's a widow for 40-some years now. And as I observed her property and her house, she obviously had wealth. And we got visiting, and we sat down with two cups of coffee, and we started talking. And she told me about some of her life and the hardships that she faced. Her husband died. She was 40s, cancer. But that didn't really stop her from working hard and being industrious. And she raised her family, and they're there with her, around her, close by, most of them. And she... as we were talking about my family and our values and where we go to church and who we are, and she said, she had a question for me. And I said, well, I'm not sure if I can answer your question because I am much younger than you. And she said, well, she has this friend that she got to know going to Mass. This woman is Catholic. And she says, Maria lives in a low-income housing, and she has no vehicle. And so she walks to Mass. And she felt sorry for her, so she offered to take her. So twice a week, she'll pick her up, and they'll go to Mass and do what they do there and come back again. And they developed a relationship, friendship. She said sometime back, a couple months ago, Maria came to her and said, really got herself into a financial pinch, and she needs some medication. She doesn't have money for it. And she asked if Teresa would help her out with that. And Teresa said, well, yeah, she's my friend. And so she needed about $500 to help her out with that one. And at one, a number of, maybe 2 months later, she said, Maria came to her again and said, I really got into a bad situation again and had the reasons for it. She said, I need about $200. Would you help me with that? And Teresa said, well, yeah, you're my friend, so I'll help you with that. But she said, this is the last time I'm going to give you money to help you. She said, you have a welfare check that comes in every month, don't you? She said, yeah. She said, I do. And so we talked about that a little bit, how much it was. And Maria did admit, well, she did have a drinking problem. And part of the money that could have went for living expenses went into her drinking habit that she had. And so the money flow stopped, and the relationship became estranged. And Maria became angry at her friend because she was no longer willing to give. And this lady, obviously, to her, it's just a little bit of money. She probably has a lot of money. It's not a big deal for her to help her out. Teresa said, am I thinking right that to keep giving her money will make her sickness? She'll just become more sickly. And I thought about that. It's a good question. So I thought about working. Working with your own hands. That's the title of the message this morning, Work with Your Own Hands. Like, what do our Bibles say about working? Like, what is God's perspective about working? Whose idea is work anyways? You know, in light of eternity and that, like, is my daily work of any value in light of eternity? Sometimes we get the feelings that maybe I should be doing something different or something that's more important, and we sort of scale things as well, he's really involved in that ministry or whatever, and so he, surely the Lord's really pleased with his work. But here I am, I'm this mother and this never-ending task of dirty clothes and food that needs to be made and the dishes need to be washed and just never-ending family homemaking that just never goes away. Like, surely, like, isn't there something more important that I could be doing? And there I am. I'm carrying my lunchbox every day, working for Oxford Cabinetry. Started that job when I was 18. I'll be 40 this year, so I guess I'll let you do the math. But I've been doing that for quite a long while. Like, has that been wasted time in light of eternity? Working, installing cabinetry, cutting beautiful trim, making people's houses functional, nice. I mean, wouldn't going to a mission field or being involved in counseling or something else, like, wouldn't that have more eternal value than my daily work? Well, Paul says to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that ye may walk honestly towards them that are without, and that ye may have lack of nothing. I thought about the book of Proverbs, and the proverb writer has so much to say about work and about about being lazy and sluggard and being diligent and useful. And he takes us to the ant in chapter 6, and he says, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man." God created these ants, these little ants that we don't really like, but he created them to work. And they work hard. And you can observe ants, they carry things that are much bigger than themselves, and they somehow get it to where they want it to go. They have their ways of working. And I don't know, like, what kind of brain does an ant have? Like, does an ant can hardly think or what? I mean, we call it instinct, but what is that? Can an ant worship? An ant can't worship. It doesn't have a will. It just does what it was created to do. And the ant is sometimes smarter than us humans. And the proverb writer takes us to the ant. And he says, look at the ant and consider her. Watch her work. Watch her be diligent and busy. She knows what to do. She doesn't even have a brain like you do to think. She doesn't have an intellect to reason. Think about her. Think about the ant. God created animals to work, and they work hard, and they're there for us as humans to take lessons from and to learn from. Well, what does the Bible say about us that it does not say about animals? How are we different than an animal? It's not a trick question. It's easy. Go ahead. All right. You have a soul. You'll live forever. Who were you made like? And whose image were you made in? In the image of God. Right. So let's turn back to Genesis chapter 1. And this is just some foundational principles that God gives to us about work. And about the work that he assigned to the first man and the first woman. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." I mean, we sometimes just need to stop and think about that for just a bit. Like, we are made in the likeness of God. You are and I am. Like, do we ever stop to consider that? There's something very valuable about human beings that animals do not have. We have been made in the likeness of God. "And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, "Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. So to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat." And it was so. And God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. What did God tell our first parents to do? What did he tell them to do? He told them to have dominion and to subdue over all the earth, the fish, the animals, the plants, the metals, the minerals, everything. It is man's responsibility to take dominion over that and to subdue it. God created, and we are creators. Obviously not like God. He took something, made it out of nothing. We take what has been made, and we create things out of that. We take that piece of wood, boys, right, and we turn it into a bluebird house. We take that piece of wood, and we turn it into a house. We take the steel and aluminum, and we punch and stamp that, and there's a trailer. And we make things. We create things. That is having dominion over things. That is subduing things. Gary takes that coffee bean and he subdues that thing and he roasts it. And we get good coffee out of it. That was the work that was given to our first parents. Dominion. Dominion over the world. Come in and have this world serve you. Have it work for you. Use it for your benefit, for your good, for your enjoyment. You can eat it. You can use it. Roll over it. That was their work. That continues to be our work today. But we see in chapter 2 there that God worked for 6 days and then he rested on the seventh day. And you and I are made so much in the image of God this morning that this work, rest pattern that God instituted is the same for us today. God worked 6 days and he rested one day. The 7-day week did not just happen. It's God's design for humankind to work 6 days and to rest one day. And in America, we've kind of adapted and adjusted our thinking to, like, we work 5 days and we have 2 off, right? I mean, that's pretty nice, isn't it? That's not really how it was. Here, in this story, they worked 6 days and had one day of rest. But regardless, that same work and rest cycle continues. And that is what man is to follow. There's nothing shameful about working 6 days. In fact, God expects us to work 6 days and rest one. When God gave the Mosaic Law, and we don't have time to read that, but in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11, and chapter 31, verses 12 through 17, take some time to read those passages. But God again instituted this cycle, this pattern of working 6 days, and then there's one day set aside for rest. It was a holy day. No work was to be done on that day. And so this is a foundational principle that continues to guide us as Christians in 2025. We work 6 days and we rest one. It's God's plan. There's another way that we can see that work was instituted from the beginning. And if you think about Adam and Eve, and when they fell into sin and disobeyed God, think about the curse that God placed upon the man and the woman. The curse was placed on something that was already in place, had already been instituted. This was already here, and the curse affected it. And so if you take the woman who was created by God to bear children, God said, you will continue to bear children, but it's going to be in pain and in sorrow that you will bear children. God told Adam, you're already working. It's really enjoyable to work. But now it's going to be with the sweat of your brow. And I'm going to curse the ground. It's not going to be so nice to you anymore. This ground's going to grow thorns and weeds and thistles and prickly, pokey things. And you'll become frustrated with this thing. You have to work extra hard. And so the curse that God gave to man was pointed at what man was already doing. Man was working. Man was already doing what he was designed to do, and that was to work. The curse did not bring work as some may think. Work is not cursed. But in our culture, you wonder sometimes, there's a lot of people that act like work isn't the most pleasant thing in the world to be done. Rather, work is fulfilling. It's rewarding. The curse did not bring work to everything. I mean, work certainly isn't cursed if God did it. God worked for 6 days and then he rested. Work is good. God has made us to work. And so, at the creation, God gave to us principles laid out in his word for us today to continue on this work and rest principle. And to see the value of working and the importance of working and working hard, working with our hands. Work is designed into our fabric, I guess, if you will. Well, the New Testament is not silent when it comes to this thing of work. In fact, there's so much in our Bibles about work. So turn back to 2 Thessalonians this time. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And we're going to keep on seeing, looking at what Paul's view of work was. 2 Thessalonians 3 verse 6 says, Paul is speaking, he says, now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly. And that word disorderly means idleness, that walketh in idleness, and not after the tradition which ye received of us. For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you. Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you, not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. But ye, brethren, be not weary in well-doing. If any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man and have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. That's quite a passage. What does it mean to be idle? What does idleness mean? Like, how would that look in my life? How would that look in your life? It's being inactive, it's being lazy, Being about worthless things. Verse 10, we like to quote that one to our children. If you don't work, you shouldn't eat. And that's taking that verse slightly out of context, because you could get the impression that, well, you can work just enough to eat and that's okay, but that really is missing the point that Paul has here for us. And there's people that are like that will work just enough to provide for themselves. And that's commendable, that's worthy, but that's missing the real point that Paul is trying to drive home to us. And so some people may say, well, I'm working enough to meet my basic needs. I'm not being a burden to society. But the point is not only just to be idle, but to be constructive with your life. The Bible calls it redeeming the time. How are you using your time? It's not working hard enough just so you have enough to eat. And Paul further explains that in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28, Paul says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." It's honorable to work. And there's many people that do work. Hard work is good. And as Christians, but just think about the ungodly people. Some of them work very hard. So they can have, they're often greedy, covetous people, pampering themselves, their own wants and desires. Maybe that's like me sometimes. They're hard workers, but as Christians, we're called to go farther than that. There's more to the hard work as Christians that we should be more intentional about, and that is not just so we have enough to eat, but so that we can give. Working to give. Working to support your family. Working hard so you can share in the needs. In this brotherhood, in our church conference, and broader than that. This is a guiding principle for us as Christians in 2025, that we work hard with our hands, not only to provide for ourselves, but to give. Working to give, not to accumulate. The Bible defines time as being involved in that which is unprofitable, doing something that's just a waste of time. And Dave talked about that just a bit. But it's giving. It's when we give our time and energy into something that God looks at and says, that's worthless. Like, that's useless to me. That has no value. It's void of any eternal good. If you think about idle people this morning, people that do not work, they're often the most suicidal people. People who are on welfare are often the most depressed and the most criminal. And I'm painting with broad brush this morning, right? There's exceptions to this. It's really not good for us not to be working. You don't feel good if you don't work. You don't feel fulfilled. You feel worthless and useless. What's the point? If you take the ungodly man, he works hard, he becomes obsessed with his work, and we call that sometimes being a workaholic. It's what drives him, but there is motivation that comes because he's producing something, he's creating something, he's bettering people's lives. There's a measure of fulfillment that comes with hard work that is truly fulfilling and satisfying. Is that how you view your work tomorrow morning when you get back at it again? That you really enjoy this? I'm so glad I can do this. This is wonderful. Or is it like, ugh, Monday morning. Redeeming the time. It doesn't necessarily mean that you and I are going to have our noses always to the grindstone and just working like crazy all the time. There's other things that you and I must do. We need our rest. And so maybe you need to take a nap so you can be more profitable. Maybe we all need to sleep at night. It's good for us to sleep and to get our rest. There is time for diversions. Maybe it's that brisk walk that invigorates you. Maybe it's that bike ride. Maybe it's throwing ball, playing pitch and catch, or you name it. But there's so many things that you and I can do as diversions that will invigorate us and refresh us and bring rest to us. Being idle is when I put vain things in front of my eyes, and we have the capability of doing that really easily. And we can spend countless hours on our devices putting vain things in front of our eyes that are just, it's idle wasting of time. And I've been guilty of doing that. Hobbies are good, but have they become my obsession? Are they my idol? Do I pour exorbitant amount of time and money into this thing? And I become proud of this thing because it's really sort of who I am. Well, Paul said he was leaving us an example in verse 9 so that we could follow him. And Paul said that they worked night and day and with labor and travail. I mean, Paul was not an idle man in any stretch of the imagination. He was a hard worker. And Paul gave up many of his rights. So why? Because he wanted the gospel not to be restricted or he just wanted it to have free course because of the gospel. And he gave up his rights as a minister of Jesus Christ. He could have partaken of their food. He had that right to do that. But yet he said, no, I'm not going to be chargeable to any of you. I'm leaving you an example of how you should live. Paul was fighting against this entitlement mindset. And that really is just a big problem in our country today. Entitlement. And it things like this, I just feel like, well, since you have it, I should be able to partake of it. And yes, there is the reality that we're called to share and we're called to have things in common. But this type of thinking that it goes like this. If you have it, I want it, I deserve it, give it to me. According to this passage, that kind of thinking is wrong. It's sinful. And it's not something that you and I want to encourage or be involved in. Entitlement. Do you feel entitled to some things this morning, or don't you? Paul did not think like this. He worked night and day. In fact, he said in verse 6, he commands them in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ to withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly or in idleness. Well, that's really strong. That thing of withdrawing, it's placing it in the same level as the sexually immoral man that Paul says we should draw a line with. This is wickedness. It's sinful. Withdraw yourself from brothers that walk disorderly. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. And Paul forgoes his rights in this time, in this letter, so he can be an example of a bigger principle of toil and labor and hard work. He wasn't going to be a burden to them. He wasn't going to be chargeable to any of them. And our country this morning is burdened by many people who do not want to work. There's folks that have no desire to put their hand to the plow and to get to work, but instead they choose to live the life of a beggar. And they live on that welfare check that comes every month. And so often it doesn't make it through the whole month because they squandered on things that, you know, I would probably squander it on things like that too. People do not want to work with their hands, with their minds, with their skills that God has given to them. Their feet don't hit the pavement to go find a job. But the interesting thing is that they would like to receive something from the people who are busy working. In fact, they expect that. They want to enjoy the fruit of someone else's labor, but they don't want to work for it. They don't want to pay for their food. They don't want to work for their food. And so not working and taking advantage of others as a long-term lifestyle is wrong. And according to Paul, it's worthy of church discipline. People caught up in welfare and entitlement thinking, it's sort of like drug addiction. It's really hard to get out of that type of thinking. That kind of mindset. We don't want to fault people that are there. We meet many people like that, and we're puzzled sometimes as to what we should do to help them. How can we best help these people as Christians? Somehow we have to help them come out of that way of thinking, to change their minds. We want to teach people. Too often our culture sees work, doesn't see work as being very virtuous. It's a curse. It's not something to be delighted in. And so we can illustrate it like this to bring it a little bit closer home for us today. We all enjoy this church building and the facility. I don't think any of us wish to go back to 422 Maple Shade Road. I don't think any of us wish to do that. But we enjoy it. But when the offering plate comes around, and by the way, giving is a way that we can use our resources wisely for the glory of God. But when it comes to that offering, that every offering comes around and it goes past us, we don't drop it in, but we enjoy the privileges of this place. We enjoy coming to this place, but hopefully other people are dishing in to help pay for this. I haven't planned my month very well, and somehow the money just has disappeared. It's ran away, and it's gone. That has happened to me, where I've sat back and I was like, well, where did this money disappear to? Well, I didn't prioritize. And it's easy to have money just be gone that quick, and you wonder, well, how did that happen so fast? But that's how the entitlement mindset thinks. They want to enjoy something, but they hope somebody else foots the bill for it. We won't all give the same amount, but are we giving what we can? Whether it's in that offering or the church offering, in the school offering, there's so many blessings that you and I take for granted that we enjoy that cost us something. And are we going to be the type of person that's going to sit on the edges and just float along with the other people's hard work? Are we going to do what we can to contribute and to give? And we're going to work hard to make that happen, because that's what we're called to do as Christians, to work hard so we can give. And so this morning, Paul didn't want to live a life like that. He doesn't want us to live a life like that. The entitlement mindset thinks like this, like I deserve. I had so many hard things happen in my life. I have been so unfortunate. And true that may be. But that kind of thinking always lends itself to laziness and idleness. And I don't really care. What can I do about it? I'm a poor soul. Are you willing to work? Verse 10. If any are not willing to work, neither should he eat. And so there's folks this morning who do find themselves in difficult situations, but their mindset is, what can I do about it? This is my lot in life. I can actually make out quite well on the street corner. I can make more money working. I mean, not working than I can working. Why would I go to work? And you think of other people who have maybe lost their jobs or are facing difficult things, but their mindset is not poor me and what can I do? But they're hard to find, these type of people, because they're busy working hard. They're going to do all they can to provide for their families. They're going to be doing all they can. They might be working two or three jobs to just make it through. But They have a different mindset. We're going to work hard to do what we can. And we can think of many, many people like that. Think of Fanny Crosby. She was blind, but she could have said, poor me, like everybody help me out, but no, it wasn't her mindset. She wrote hundreds of songs for us today. Helen Keller, blind and deaf. There's all kinds of people who have come out of great tragedy, difficulty. Ben Carson, there's so many people who have just had terrible childhood trauma, but yet they have chosen a different mindset than this entitlement mindset. Poor me. Everybody needs to help me. There's two ways of thinking this morning. One way will get you down on the street corner. The other way, faithfulness working, God will reward that. And he'll help you. Doesn't mean it will be easy. There's a difference between the man who wants to work and the man who does not want to work. And sometimes the doors that open for us for job opportunities are not really like what we thought we would like to do. And we say no to them, but sometimes God would like to teach us something by taking that job for maybe just a short time. There's experiences that we can have that we'll never have. But God can teach us things, even in situations that we don't think are very ideal. Just be a faithful worker. Just be a faithful worker. That man that stands by the street corner with his bucket in his hand with a sign that says, God bless you. If you were to stop and talk to them, which I have done sometimes, they are not interested in working. They just want you to throw your $5 in their bucket and keep going. That man really is not in need. He's not the poor. Does that make sense? I'm open to your perspectives and your input this morning. But if God has given him two hands, 2 feet, and a clear mind, God is calling him to work and to labor. And we would be glad to offer people jobs and have them work for us. But it's so hard to get them out of that addiction of entitlement. Widows and orphans in their afflictions, the needs among the people of God, those of the household of faith. And sometimes we do get ourselves into bad financial situations that we really need some help out because we've made some bad decisions and we've dug some pretty big holes and we're in a tight spot. That has happened. That's part of life sometimes. That's how God teaches us things. And sometimes we need some people to come around us and to help us. But we need to enter into that problem with, I'm going to have to work hard to get myself out of this. I'm not expecting the church to come in and bail me out or my dad or some close friend. But I'm going to have to work hard. I've made some bad choices. I'm responsible for that. And so I'm going to do what I can to make it out of this. And of course, there's people who are unable to work because of accident, because of disability. There's widows, there's single moms, those that are truly poor among us. But if we can work, we should work faithfully and diligently. Well, I am completely out of time. Colossians chapter 3, in verse 22, talking about working again, says, not as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God, and whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as to the Lord, and not unto men, and knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. Singleness of hearts. Our motivation for working well this morning is not just to please men, and I've been guilty of that because you want to do a nice job, and there's compliments that come with doing a good job and doing it well and doing it right. But as Christians, our motivation should go farther than that because we're doing it as unto Jesus. This is for you, Lord. I'm doing it for you, Christ. This is worship to you. I'm doing it to please you. That's our motivation. Singleness of hearts. And so now the most lowly task has now become very valuable and very eternally rewarding because you're working as unto the Lord. You're doing it as unto Jesus. It has become worship to the Lord of Lords. Jesus this morning is worthy of all of our work, of all of our worship, of all of our work. And just think briefly about Jesus. As he was baptized, came out of the Jordan River, and a voice from heaven spoke out, "His Father," he said, "this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." How long had Jesus lived on this earth till that time? He was 30 years old. Jesus lived in obscurity, unknown by many people, a carpenter's son, a poor man. He had tools in his hands, and he worked hard. And what did God say about him? He hadn't even started his earthly ministry yet. He hadn't even begun that yet. But the Father said, "I look at your life, my son, from birth till now." And he says, "I am well pleased." And so we're tempted to think my work isn't very important. I wish I could do something more important. I wish I could do something more for other people. We miss the people right around us. The Father says, "I'm well pleased." Well pleased with his son, who spent 30 years of his life working as a carpenter's son. And God was well pleased with him. Martin Luther, a quote from him says, he says, "What seems to be secular works are actually the praise of God and represent an obedience which is well pleasing to him." We have been called to work today. That's our calling, is to work. Elizabeth Elliot, which was the wife of Jim, who was slain, taking the gospel to a foreign island, she said this. She says, "My house, my kitchen, my desk, my very body are meant to be the holy places in this world for the eternal God." Is that how you view your life, your work, your house, your kitchen, your body? And so this morning, if you spend your days, if you spend your life as a carpenter, as a mechanic, as a stonemason, as a mother, as a father, as a farmer, as a salesman, school teacher, accountant, whatever you all do, if you spend your life doing that faithfully, as unto the Lord, pouring your heart into it, not just so you can accumulate, but so you can give, so you can help, you can bless other people. That, this morning, I'm suggesting to you is a life well spent. It's well lived. That is not a life that's subpar in any kind of way. Work as unto the Lord. Well, may God help us. If I said something this morning that was not accurate, I'm open to your discussion and to your thoughts. But may we be inspired to view work as God sees work and do it as worship unto him. May God bless you this week as you work and as you work hard and as you're faithful. Let's kneel for prayer.